did also as a department is beyond meeting DDGs who had underperformed and them presenting their plans, we had a separate workshop beyond that for the program, environmental program. If you look into our budget, majority of our budget, they've got a sizable amount of resources. They do work very closely with entities in delivering environmental programs, but it is one of the programs that has actually had challenges in delivering, and they only achieve 33% of their targets. And as a result, we then had to drill down in as far as underperformance of this branch and look into what needs to be done and to ensure that the improvement plan that is presented will indeed yield results that will have positive impact on service delivery. We have formal, as indicated, I think I've already indicated this, but there are formal improvement plans, which we have attached as annexure in the presentation, Honourable Chairperson and members. We are not going to go into detail, but it's a demonstration that this process is formalized, and I am managing it on a quarterly basis with the DDGs involved. Where there are programs, DDGs and programs that have shown that they are in the ICU, mainly Forestry, Waste Bureau and environmental programs, those ones we have more regular engagement with them, given that now we are implementing an improvement plan as part of our performance management. In the next slide, what we also want to share, Chairperson and members, is that what we have realized in the department is that when we compare ourselves with the rest of the other departments across the national government, is that we have the highest number of key performance indicators. You will see we have 149 across the whole, in total for the whole department. And we have then worked very closely with the DPME, who have indicated that we need to be focusing on strategic targets as part of what then is highlighted in the APP, so that we are able to focus on targets that will make an impact to the citizens out there, as opposed to look into operational targets, which should be managed as part of our operational plan. So in the 2022-23 APP, as part of our planning and also continuing to inform our five-year strategic plan outcomes and the sector MTSF, we have then worked on ensuring that we deal or we extract and reduce those numbers from 149 to a lower number, which is mainly focusing on strategic key performance indicators. When we compare ourselves with the rest of the other departments, we have the highest KPIs, 149. Big departments, I think, Home Affairs, Education, Health, they have at most 60 performance indicators in their APP. So as a department, we felt that we had to ensure that we focus on strategic key performance indicators, which we have started gradually working on in as far as our performance is concerned. The other aspect is that when we then look, having have put in place comprehensive implementation of improvement plans, monitoring very closely in the first quarter of this year, 22-23, we are seeing noticeable performance improvement, especially in those branches where at the end of the financial year 21-22, there were issues around the performance of those branches. What we also did, because one of the contributing factors to our performance was as a result of SEM-related matters, we have also ensured that we proactively have terms of reference for all the work that needs to be done in the year 22-23. And all those terms of reference for the projects were concluded. And proactively through the Office of the CFO, working closely with the DDGs, we are then trying to accelerate our SEM process informed by those targets. We do have monthly tracking with especially those programs that are underperforming. And also, I do have a bi-weekly session with all DDGs on expenditure, where we look at expenditure, what are your commitments, invoices that have come through, are you paying those invoices within the stipulated time frame. In the next slide, we are then, the next slide, please. The next slide, we then are coming to the expenditure. And I think the chairperson has actually highlighted the concern of the committee, where as a department, we spend 82%, which has resulted to an under expenditure of a nominal amount of 1.6 billion. And it is a huge amount. As a department, we are really ensuring that we do not see a repeat of this under expenditure. Of this under expenditure, given that it has impact on job creation on the ground. And the main programs that underspend is the EP program. So they only spend 71 and also forestry. So those are the two which are really, really concerning, and we are working very closely with them to deal with the with those matters. In the next slide, we are then going into the reasons for under expenditure, and here this is mainly affecting the environmental programs, where there was a delay encountered in as far as the expanded public works program that this program rolled out. This was mainly as a result of, I think, as a department, we've had a negative audit outcome in the past years. And there, the auditor highlighted the issues around the manner in which we have been allocating and spending money on EPWP. And one of the critical findings that the department had was that we were actually transferring money to implementing agencies. And in certain instances, there were inefficiencies identified by the Auditor General. Firstly, on how those implementation agents were appointed. But secondly, it was an issue of following the money. Once you transfer to the implementing agent, are you able then as a department to account fully for all those money that were transferred? And those transfers were made in advance on a quarterly basis, and then the implementing agent would then be expected to report back. And some of those elements as a department, we were found wanting in as far as that is concerned. And they then indicated that as a department, we need then to comply with Section 217 of the Constitution and ensure that the manner in which we deliver these EPWP is subjected to competitive bidding, which then compelled us to move from transferring to implementing agent and then move into a procure to pay process, which then compelled the department that we must advertise tenders, and the prospective service providers that can assist in employing the EPWP then had to then put forward bids, which then are then supposed to be evaluated and then awarded by the department. And I'm going to allude, given that there was that change, there were indeed certain challenges around that change. The other aspect that also we are highlighting is that Program 6 has about 3 billion budget allocated to it, and changing from transfer into goods and services therefore then required that we need to have capacitated our supply chain management unit within the CFO's office to be able to handle the magnitude of the transaction that we're going to be coming through in terms of then the procurement process. And that capacity was not immediately addressed by the department, but I am going to allude to how we have then dealt with those issues to ensure that our SCM capacity is geared up now to respond to the new way of procuring for the EPWP in the department. In the next slide, I think I have already indicated that the delays were then encountered, given that now we have had to go out on tender. We're no longer just transferring resources to individual implementing agents, and then the implementing agent would run their own processes, which as a department we didn't have a view of. Which then also, in a way, the Auditor General indicated that we were compromising certain internal controls because as a department, we need to be able to follow and trace where the resources are going. Are they going at the right place? Are they being utilized and yielding the services that are intended by the department? So given that now we went out on tender, there were quite a number of bids that came through, and we had to evaluate all those bids and look into then awarding and concluding contracts with then implementing agents that would have been appointed using a competitive bidding process, and that has a bit of delay in terms of implementation, and some of the contracts were only finalized mid-year, and some of them towards the third quarter, which then would have resulted in some of the resources not being spent. There were additional resources that were made available to the department, and these additional resources was as a result of an implementation of the Presidential Employment Stimulus Program, whereby all departments implementing EPWP were then allocated additional resources. And that was mainly as a result of a realization of the unemployment rate out there, and a need then to look into a short-term intervention by government to ensure that there is an expansion on the EPWP. However, in our case, as indicated, those funds were made available only after the adjustment budget during the financial year 21-22. And with the procurement processes that were facing challenges in the department, then we then obviously started the programs very late, and we could not necessarily spend all those resources. What I also want to highlight in this slide is that public entities of the department, like Isimangaliso and Sanbi, also did receive these amounts, and they were able to, utilizing existing contracts that they had. We didn't have new contracts because all our contracts were irregular. We had to then start from scratch. But with entities with their contracts that were existing, they did manage to deliver on those programs. In the next slide, I'm also alluding to the reasons for under expenditure. This is mainly around waste management, where we had a recycling enterprise support program, and an allocation of 72 million was made available in that financial year. And there were issues here around also SCM, and I'm going to go into the details, where the department was not geared in terms of capacity to procure. Majority of the resources that the department had was mainly channeled through transfer payment. And the SCM capacity, we had only about, I think, 11 officials. And yet we had a budget, a huge budget of about 9 billion. We then had to look into capacitating that SCM, given that we are realizing that the shift and the reclassification of resources from transfer into goods and services then has necessitated the department to beef up its capacity in relation to that. The other one that is also understanding is forestry, and forestry is a branch together with fisheries that was transferred. It was transferred to the Department of Environment with effect from April 2020. So this was the first year the forestry branch and fisheries were then part of the Department of Environment. And there were certain issues around procurement of services in these two branches that we inherited from the Department of Agriculture, from DEF, were being done in a decentralized manner. And when they then were transferred into the department, as per the recommendation from the Auditor General, procurement had to be centralized in order to ensure that you have proper controls in place. We had then had to do the same for these branches, and that centralization in this year, given that that was the first year of migration, had challenges in terms of then being able to procure for the various regions. And ensure that those regions are indeed ready for implementation of various programs at the right time, at the beginning of the financial year, and they are able to spend from the 1st of April. In the next slide, I've already highlighted that as a department, we implement this centralized approach as part of intensifying our control environment. Given the huge irregular expenditure that the department had incurred, which was as a result of decentralized procurement, and where the center had no control of what was happening in the various provinces and also in the various regions. So we then had to centralize and ensure that we put controls in place. However, Honorable Chair, we are now looking into how best then to ensure that with the centralized approach, we still make sure that services at a regional level are still procured within reasonable time, and there are no delays as a result of trying to introduce controls, and at the same time, we then are compromising on service delivery. So it's about a balance. You have your controls in place, but also at the same time, you must have measures in place to ensure that the regions, they start implementation of their programs on time, and they do not have to wait for the center to do all the procurement on their behalf. So I think the next one is just then providing a summary in terms of the root causes of the underspending, where we had to have a change in terms of the classification from transfers into goods and services. But also we had to centralize and put in place control measures that will ensure that there's compliance to the laws, especially procurement laws. And there is a very clear back-to-back procure-to-pay system, which then becomes the culture of the department. And then we look into how then do we service the various regions with a tight internal control environment in place, which is what the Auditor General had found that as a department we were not necessarily doing well on. And I must say that we have an improved internal control environment now. And the main thing is to ensure that we work very closely and in a smooth approach with the officials in the regions for them to be able to deliver services. Capacity issues, we have had challenges around this. We've done our level best, as I think the committee would be aware that compensation of employees, there is a ceiling set by National Treasury. So, you know, expanding the number of posts, we had to look and see on how best we can rearrange from the existing posts that we have in the department so that we then enable additional posts for the SCM to then be in a position to carry out the new responsibilities as a result of the reclassification and the requirement of the accounting standards as highlighted in our audit. I would want to highlight that also the compliance universe of the department has improved greatly. Moving forward, it's some of the areas that we are hoping that as a department we would not be found wanting, and we have a responsibility to be dealing with the past huge irregular expenditure that the department has had as a result of a decentralized procurement that we've had. The next slide. I think I've already alluded to this, and it mainly, Chair and Honourable Members, impact on EP and why we are emphasizing on this and us as a department taking EP as a critical program is because of their contribution to job creation on the ground. And they were a branch that was negatively impacted upon in terms of irregular expenditure that resulted from environmental programs. We had to also train service providers. Service providers who have never tendered before, we had to train them and make sure that they understand when we issue a tender, they are then in a position to respond to those tenders as required by the procurement prescripts and also the procurement requirements. The inadequate capacity, I think I've already indicated that in terms of the reclassification, but we have had to then capacitate the SCM unit. The next slide. I think now I'm just alluding to the improvements, given that the main reason was around compliance to SCM and also trying to ensure that we do not find ourselves with irregular expenditure as we had in the past. We have enhanced our SCM. All director and deputy director positions in the SCM division within the CFO's office have been filled. We also have brought on board temporal capacity for a period of 12 months in a form of SCM practitioners. We have interns in the department, and we've made sure that SCM also does have a sizable amount, and we have four interns that are appointed to deal with SCM. And we have brought on board a service provider for 24 months. And this service provider is mainly also to assist in the function issues around quality assurance, making sure that the department adheres to the requirements of the prescripts, but also to assist in terms of then making sure that we do comply to the procurement process as stipulated. In the department, we had to review and revise the SCM policies. SCM, the policies and the delegation were varying from branch to branch and from a region to another region. We had to standardize all that to ensure that there is ease of operation across the whole department, and also ensure that there then is a clear sense of what is expected from the various officials that are responsible for procurement, even at branch level, for them to be complying with SCM. Training has been done for both SCM practitioners and officials who participate mainly in bid specification, evaluation, adjudication, given that now most of the resources are now under goods and services, which therefore means we need to be going out on competitive bidding, and we need to be then applying procurement prescripts in as far as securing or procuring services for the department. We also have indicated to the service provider where there is independent quality assurance that is embedded in the system. And I think this is assisting to ensure that whatever the different committees are doing, we also do have some form of quality assurance that is done before then the bids are then taken to the bid adjudicating committee for the bid adjudication committee to then make appropriate decision. There are daily meetings, engagements between branch managers and the SCM team together with the rest of the other team members of the CFO's office to trace payments and look at monthly commitments, and that happens on a regular basis. In the next slide, I'm just also highlighting in terms of the SCM, we are having the procurement plan, which every department is expected to put in place as informed by the demand of the projects that the department is supposed to have. We then have to have a procurement plan, and that procurement plan is then submitted to National Treasury. It's also advertised on our website, and also then managed by the Office of the CFO. There are weekly engagements with line branches to monitor and unblock areas around the various stages, from drawing of terms of reference to ensuring that you have your committees in place, which are going to put together your specs, approving your specs, going into tendering, and tendering must be for a stipulated time in terms of the regulation, evaluation, and then adjudication thereafter. So these weekly meetings and weekly reporting, which now are inculcated within our system, are then assisting in ensuring that it unblocks any blockages that are there in the procurement process. We also have, because of the number of documents that we receive, we realize that the issue of document management is one of a critical issue that the department must deal with. So we have proper storage around tender documents, but also we have also kept the tender information in a soft copy so that it's easily accessible in cases there are queries, but also for audit purposes, we need to ensure that we have proper record keeping. Internal control never existed in the department, but as a result of rearranging within the existing structure that we have, given that we can't increase our personnel budget, we have a personnel ceiling, a compensation ceiling, we have created a directorate of internal control. And this is one of the areas that will assist us in ensuring that we strengthen internal controls and also fast track in dealing with the irregular and fruitless expenditure that has happened in the past. We are in a process now of even sending through certain cases that have been investigated, consequence management taken to National Treasury for National Treasury to begin to be condoning, so that we can be able to clean that history and then move forward implementing the systems of improvements that we have. We have also established a portfolio, a forum for CFO and SCM, not only for the department, but also for the entities, given that entities are delivery models and they deliver on behalf of a main mandate of the department. We then share best practices and ensure that where we need to be assisting entities, we are then providing that appropriate assistance, transferring resources to them on time to enable them to then deal with delivery at an entity level. The next slide, what one then wants to highlight and indicate that with the challenges we've had in terms of performance, but also in terms of expenditure, we then have put in place a formal improvement plan. This then begins to show, this is the first quarter performance of the department, where the department has shown an improvement to about 75% in terms of targets that are achieved. You will note that from the 149, with the exercise that we've done with the Department of DPME, us focusing on strategic key performance indicators in the year 22-23, those have come down to 85. So we believe that it is we will then have the strategic focus on what needs to be delivered as a department, which will make an impact to our citizens out there in the country and in the various provinces. We also in this presentation are indicating that the programs which we have put through an improvement plan, especially environmental program, where we saw them delivering on 33% of their targets in the first quarter. They had delivered about 63%. And they also had contributed in the first quarter to achieving 13,034 work opportunities. And out of those work opportunities, we are able to account for already 48% being women and 63% being youth beneficiaries. We also have measures in place to address any other delays around missed targets, and where we can extend a contract within the acceptable prescripts, we have done that. And we've also utilized entities in terms of acceleration of delivery so that the jobs on the ground are not compromised. We also are piloting an in-house model whereby we look into employing the EPWP directly by the department, so that then it becomes a process that is much quicker, and we're able to respond to the needs that are there on the ground in as far as EPWP work is concerned. So those are some of the improvements that we are beginning to see. In the next slide, there it's mainly in relation to our expenditure, just comparing to the first quarter of last year. And I'm highlighting the two programs, given that these are the programs that have been performing poorly. And these are the programs where, as an accounting officer, as the DG, I have a formal improvement plan with the DDGs, and I'm managing it on an ongoing basis. And we have clear targets for what needs to improve in order for these two programs to demonstrate an improvement moving forward. So what we are highlighting here is that comparing first quarter of 2021 financial year and the first quarter of 22-23 financial year. We can see that already environmental program is showing an improvement, a slight improvement in forestry, and there's still need for even a bigger push in improving and implementation of those improvement plans. On a quarterly basis, we also then I provide feedback to the Deputy Minister and the Minister, given that they were very clear, given the poor performance of last financial year, on how then are we unblocking challenges, both financially and non-financially, in order for the department to achieve. In the next slide, Chair, we were asked in line with your letter to just talk to the FFE's economic transformation plan. And what we are highlighting here is our statistics for the financial year 21-22, where we have indicated that we have utilized, we've spent about 52% of our total expenditure on goods and services there, mainly for BEE compliant companies. And out of that, women accounted for 16%, youth 4%. In as far as procurement of services, as a department, we're not doing very well with people with disability. In as far as employment equity, we are around 1.92%. I think we are meeting the target, but we need to be doing more on procurement from companies owned by people with disability. And you can see that there is zero, even though there's an amount, but it's far less than a percentage. And as a department, we really need to do more. We do also support SMMEs in terms of township and also rural areas. And this also is done not only by the department, but also by the entities that are linked to the department. In the next slide, also continuing with the economic transformation, as a department, especially on procurement, we do take a cue from the spirit and also the intent of the 2017 procurement regulations. We do understand that there was a constitutional court judgment. However, National Treasury has been given a grace period of a year to continue using these 2017 procurement preferential regulations while they are putting in place other measures which will then be applied across government. So we have been taking the cue from that, and we do indicate that as a department, what we had done in the past, we had even taken a step further, which we were then warned legally that we should not have gone beyond what the regulations are saying. We were implementing set-asides in the department for us to achieve a particular target for women company and also for youth and black companies. We were actually including that in our terms of reference, and we were then cautioned that this might be found to be irregular, more so because of the challenges that are there in the in court. So we had to then tone it down in terms of our terms of reference and not necessarily be very direct on implementing set-aside. I must say, Chair, that has assisted us. However, we need then also to bring ourselves to comply with the regulation and not necessarily push it further, because then we may be found wanting when then the Auditor General comes through to say we've now come up with our own rules which are not necessarily stipulated in the legislation of procurement, even more challenging that this has been challenged in the court of law. We also, based on the nature of services and market availability, the department therefore specifies the BEE level, obviously in line with the legislative framework, And we then promote SMMEs through utilization of the definition of the EMEs. The EMEs, the Honorable Chair and Members, it is the exempted microenterprises. So those are SMMEs that are having a turnover of less than 10 million per annum. So we have stuck to those guides. And also the QSEs, those are the qualifying small business enterprises, which is defined in the procurement procedures and regulation. And those are mainly SMMEs that are having a turnover annually of less than 50 million. So we now target ourselves and limit ourselves within the aspect and the rule of the law, as opposed to us then taking it a step further. The next slide is just outlining the regulations on how then we are dealing with that. And we are expected in terms of the regulation for tenders in excess of 30 million that we then have to do subcontracting, and it must be informed by those SMME companies, both EMEs and also QSEs, to the level of ensuring that we bring on board designated groups. And that's basically what we are doing now, just to stick to what is stipulated in the procurement regulation. So the bullets, what I'm highlighting there, Chair, is that as a department, we have had to align ourselves and uniformly apply the regulations and based on what is allowable within the legal space. And yet,
Madam Shabalala?
Honorable Chair?
Yeah, on injury time, please refer.
Oh, let me hand over to the DDG Fisheries, just to go through briefly on the fisheries side. Apologies for taking time, Chairperson. Sue, over to you.
Good morning, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, Minister DG and Deputy Minister. As the Minister and DG have indicated, my name is Sue Middleton and I'm the DDG of Fisheries Management. I'll start on slide 20, which deals with programs to ensure that previously disadvantaged individuals are able to participate in the fishing industry. The South African fishing sector contributes less than 1% to the total GDP. As Minister said, we have three fishing sectors in the country. Firstly, commercial, small scale, and then thirdly, the recreational sector. The commercial fishery is worth about 8 billion and directly employs about 28,000 people. The small scale fishing sector is estimated to be around 16 million, comprising of 147 fishing communities. And in order to ensure the implementation of transformation objectives, sectors are managed through the Marine Living Resources Act of 1998, which is an old act which is about to be reviewed. We also have the General Policy on the Allocation of Fishing Rights, which was reviewed in 2021, as well as sector-specific policies and regulations. We have regulations that were promulgated under the MLRA in 2005 and are due for renew and review. And then we have sector-specific permit conditions, which are amended on an annual basis. Small-scale fishing rights were allocated in 2020 in three coastal provinces of Northern Cape, Eastern Cape, and KZN. And the Western Cape is still pending. We are just restarting the process in the Western Cape with an aim of allocating rights by March 2023. And then in the commercial sector, new rights were allocated in 2015-16 in eight sectors, and 10 sectors were reallocated in 2021-22, what is known as FRAP 21-22. Next slide, please. The next two slides just indicate the transformation profiles of the sectors that were allocated in 2015, that's slide 21. And the blue bar chart shows average Black shareholding, with the orangey brownish color reflects the percentage of TAC held by Black individuals, and the green one is the percentage of TAE, or total allowable effort, that are held by Black individuals. And just to explain that fisheries are either managed through a TAC, a quantum, or through effort. And it is our belief, and we'll show it in the next slide as well, that a more reliable indicator of transformation would be a Black percentage holding of TAC and TAE rather than shareholding. If we can go to the next slide, that just indicates
Slide 22.
Yes.
Yes, again, the acronyms, you're saying the TAC holders and so on. Can you please remember talking to people who are not in the sector? That's us, number one. And number two, the public, which is listening to you out there. This is a public platform. Thank you.
Okay. My apologies for that. So total TAC stands for total allowable catch, which is calculated on an annual basis. And that translates into quantum, or the amount of fish in kilograms or tons that a right holder can extract. With other fisheries are managed by total allowable effort, or TAE, and that is normally based on the number of vessels that are allowed into a fishery, the size of the vessels, their engine capacity, and or the number of crew on a vessel, or the number of fishing days. So we try and control fishing through effort. The next slide. This slide reflects the 2021-22 fishing rights allocation process in the 10 fisheries. And as Minister said, although the results were announced in February and the figures are reflecting the February outcomes, we are in the process of dealing with appeals, and this may change slightly. But in terms of the 10 sectors that were reallocated now, we are looking at an average percentage Black ownership of a total allowable catch or effort at standing at 83%. The figure isn't there, but the average is 83%. Percentage Black shareholding is at 88.76%. Percentage female shareholding in the 10 sectors is at 56%. Youth is only at 19%. And then disability shareholding is at 2.5%. So as this slide will show, the transformation profiles in the fishing sector have improved since 2005. We would argue is one of the most transformed sectors in the South African economy. If we can go to slide 23. So programs that are in place to assist previously disadvantaged individuals to participate in the fishing industry include us revising our commercial policies to make sure that we meet constitutional objectives and improve the transformation levels in the fishing industry. And during the rights allocation process, the recent one that was concluded in February of this year, Applicants were awarded a weighted score based on, amongst other things, their profile with regard to race, gender, and age, applicants' Black ownership, applicants' empowerment profiles, and employee service record with regard to historically disadvantaged individuals and years of service, the percentage historically disadvantaged wage bill of the total wage bill, dividends paid to shareholders or members, and the average financial flow to beneficiaries, including historically disadvantaged beneficiaries, and the promotion of local economic development in respect of where harbors, where fishes, which harbors are landed, and where fish is processed. And what we try to do there in the 22 fishing season is to award points to those harbors outside of Cape Town in order to stimulate the, especially the Eastern Cape harbors. If we can go to the next slide. This one, I think dealt with in previous slides, just to say that we do have a transfer policy, and one of the key objectives is that if you sell your right to another entity, you have to improve transformation profiles. You cannot go backwards. Next slide. Now, some of the challenges that are faced by our new entrants who are trying to get into the fishing sector are that there are limited resources and there's more demand than there is fish available, and that in order to be fair and transparent, you have to have a competitive process. It has been argued that particularly for small scale, their allocations, their access to what we call the basket of species is limited because they're limited to nearshore species. And we need to improve our research in order to make sure that we are able to recover those species that are under threat or are overfished. We do need to increase our compliance and enforcement efforts to minimize illegal fishing and poaching. And we need to assist rights holders to access new markets in order to optimize their catch. Many of the sectors, especially the SMMEs and small scale, have a lack of access to finances and infrastructure support. And there we have put programs in support in place to assist training and access to markets. And in the small-scale sector, they have limited business skills, and we've also put a whole lot of training and capacity building initiatives in place in the four coastal provinces. The next slide, which I won't go into, slides 26. Slides 27 to 34 detail the type of training interventions that are in place, where they are in place, and which organizations have entered into partnerships with ourselves. So, DG, with your permission, I think we can skip now to slide 35, which is no longer fisheries. I think it's the EP program. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Just in conclusion, Chairperson, the committee asks that we present information on job creation. We are highlighting here the jobs that we've created during that year. Mainly there's three branches, environmental program, forestry and fisheries. On fisheries, what I'm highlighting here is that there would have been 161 work opportunities created, of which 76% of those were from an impoverished West Coast fishing town, and also 55% were females, and youth 34%. The next slide, which is my last slide, Chair, is then breaking down the work opportunities of both forestry and EP, mainly informed by the EPWP program that we have implemented for that financial year. In the various provinces, we have allocated and indicated out of the total how many are women, youth, people with disability, and how many SMMEs we have supported in relation to that. This therefore brings us to the end of our presentation. Thank you, Chairperson and honorable members. Thank you.
Thank you, DG and the team. Thank you, Minister. What we'll do now, I'll get from the honorable members indications of the members who would like to comment and raise questions. You know how we do it, honorable members. Can I have indications of who want to say something?
Matafa. My hand is up, Mlenzana.
Honorable Matafa, honorable Mlenzana.
Peters.
Tlangwini.
Honorable Tlangwini.
Honorable Sarupen, please.
Honorable Sheikh Imam, honorable Sarupen, honorable Peters.
Okay.
Right? So let's see. We said honorable Matafa. We said honorable Mlenzana, and then we said honorable Sarupen, honorable Tlangwini.
Oh.
Come again.
Okay.
Okay. Let's start. Honorable Matafa.
Thank you very much, Chair. Good morning, Chair. Good morning, Minister and the team. Chair, I have load shedding where I am, so I'll try to keep the video on. If I struggle, I will switch it off through your permission. Chair, let me first start by thanking the presentation and the inputs by the Minister. And I would want to believe that the committee will also agree and support the spirit at which the minister is viewing the issue of underspending. So that is the attitude that we are actually calling for from the political heads, to ensure that they are hands-on and they ensure that they put their foot down as far as underspending is concerned, because that is an injustice to those that are supposed to be receiving service based on the spending by departments. Chair, let me start with the issue of transformation. Mayor Tshabalala speaks, and rightfully so, around court challenges that are being mounted with regards to issues of pre-qualifications. Now, my question, especially as it relates to people with disabilities and the youth, she mentioned that there is a caution that was received that these issues might be irregular if you put specific set aside. Now, I want to ask or even encourage the department to receive or to seek a formal legal opinion. Because from where I'm sitting, my understanding is that the court only pronounced on issues of BEE pre-qualification when you're dealing with evaluation of proposals and tender submitted. And the little knowledge that I have is that the court case was brought by an organization that we know is hell-bent on protecting the interests of the minority. And their only lens is the racial one, but doesn't look at the I'm lagging a word to describe certain groupings in humanity, in terms of youth, in terms of people with disabilities, women, and so forth. So I am saying maybe a legal opinion is required, is to be able to see that this issue of setting aside for people with disabilities, it is not a racially based decision, but rather to address certain sectors of society. Will it be illegal to have set aside in the procurement policy? Because with the little knowledge that I have, I don't think that it will be. Because the same organization in its constituency, the one that went to court, will have disabled people of the race that they prefer. And then where we are sitting, Chair, we understand that their objective is squarely and mainly to protect the interest of those that have benefited through discriminatory laws of the apartheid era. So my suggestion and my plea is that maybe a legal opinion should be sought around this matter. Because if we're going to always be scared to transform society, especially the economy, we're not going to go anywhere. And as Chair, as politicians, we are the ones that have to account to our constituencies in terms of how far have we gone to address their plight. And the plight of the people with disabilities is a justified one. On that issue, Chair, which would have been my last issue in terms of how I put my notes, I'm interested to find out what is the ministry and the department doing to ensure that there is transformation in the fishery sector as well as in the forestry sector. On the fisheries sector, Chair, one of the hindrances for the same categories of people that I've mentioned entering the space is exorbitant costs that are associated with licensing. So my question there is to find out in the fisheries sector, the licensing fee, is there a separation between small-scale fisheries and commercial fisheries? And if they are the same, how then do we assist the small-scale farmers and these particular categories of people that I have identified, particularly those that reside in the coastal areas? How do we assist them to ensure that indeed they do penetrate the economy of the ocean? And then maybe coupled to that will just be an indication from the department, what is the status of the Oceans Economy Master Plan? I'm sitting with the belief and hope that these questions that I have raised would be somehow contained in the master plan. Where is it? How far is it? And what is the prospect of it coming to full fruition? The input that there is a improvement plan which is formalized and monitored is very much welcome. And we think that it will address many issues, because every time we speak about lack of accountability, lack of oversight, which leads to underspending, underperformance, and so forth. So this is a step in the right direction. What I just missed is if whether there are sanctions linked to failure by those that are charged with responsibilities from this improvement plan that will be meted to those particular individuals. Because for me, Chair, it's well and good to have a plan which you're going to monitor, which you're going to formalize. But if those that are supposed to push the plan forward are not doing it, are not held to account, then the plan will just be worth the paper that is written on and nothing else. So I'm just interested to find out if whether will there be sanctions that have been identified that are linked to this particular improvement plan in the department, as it relates to understanding KPI fulfillment and SCM processes. Chair, my last one, speaking on SCM, Mechabalala indicates that there will be an additional human capital resources that will come through, particularly in the space of the supply chain management for 12 months, if I heard correctly. So it's a temporary measure. Now, my question there is that how does this impact on what she would have repeatedly mentioned of the ceiling imposed by the National Treasury on compensation of employees? So the cost that is associated with the temporary skills, which are in part will draw compensation on employees. What would be the impact? And also, how will it be budgeted for? Meaning, which funds will be used to fund this particular intervention? And by all means, we welcome it and we believe that it's a good intervention. But once again, Chair, thank you very much for the commitment that the Minister is showing and the DG as well to ensure that the issues identified are going to be responded to. And the responses to the letter that you have put are very succinct and we really appreciate it. Thanks, Chair, for the opportunity.
Honorable Matafa, thank you very much. Honorable Nzana, please come in.
No, thanks, Chairperson. Let me also welcome the presentation by both the Minister and DG. Chairperson, can you allow me to switch off my video? At least now you have seen that I am not a robot.
Yeah, thank you. No.
Can I switch it off, Chair?
Yes,
thank you so much. Chairperson, also welcoming the presentation, but let me start by apologizing for my background. I am in a little bit awkward area. I'm in your province, KZN. You know how busy KZN is, so there will always be a little background disturbance, but I try to manage to solicit a space where there isn't that noise. Minister, you know, mere 68% of your annual targets with the department have been fully achieved. Now, I don't want to appear sarcastic, Chairperson, but if a minister would be grading herself and telling South Africans on her performance, would we be saying the minister together with the DG and her ministry, South Africans should be grading her performance at the level of 68%? Now, while 68% performance, the minister is enjoying that, and we have to say thank you. Isn't this poor performance, Minister? That's my question. Yes, of course, let me echo what Honorable Matafa is saying, that yes, one would appreciate that there is this formal improvement plan that are in place. One would then be interested on monitoring. Who's monitoring that? The accounting officer is here, Chairperson, you know, unashamedly and, you know, proudly saying the center is not holding. Provinces and programs are doing as they wish. Hence, then there is this understanding. One would want to get an explanation as to what actions have been taken against the DDGs affected in terms of the non-performance as required by the plans. So there are three programs here where you realize consistent material underspending, or what one would call perennial underspending. Now, my question would be to the minister. You have program 6, environmental programs, program 7, chemical and waste program, and you have program 8, forestry and management. Now, when last were these programs on spot in terms of spending? For me, Chairperson, this is the first time I'm interacting with the department and the platform as a member of the Standing Committee on Appropriations. Perhaps something better or good was once done. When was that? I just want to have an interest. Because looking at now, the issues raised by the audit findings, is that in the 2020-2021 financial year, there was material underspending. If now you look at the preliminary underspending report, 2021-2022, it's projecting 1.6 billion, underspending, as against the 1.64 billion for 2020-2021. Now, one would like to know what are the interventions done, particularly in these particular programs. I'm happy to say, because when introductions were done, I understand that program managers or DDGs responsible for each of these programs are here and perhaps would be able to fill us in as to what is it that is actually in place. My last concern or comments, Chair, would be that when you are looking at forestry, you know, South Africa's forest industry is a multi-billion rand industry, and you would know that it is responsible for 9.8 of the country's agricultural GDP and 4.9 of South Africa's manufacturing GDP. Now, with an estimated export value of over 8.4 billion. Now, it clearly tells you that here you are talking of a contributor to South Africa's economy. Now, what interventions is the department doing to transform this industry? I don't want to say it was rhetoric that was presented here. Can we get certain figures together with time frames? When we are talking jobs, can we get such figures and time frames? Chair, it's just that. And then my last one, as I learned, would be, I heard the department crying foul of the delay in terms of transfer of funds. I would believe from National Treasury to the department, and hence then there was a disturbance of the cash flow, which then affected their supply chain management systems. But then, why was there no adjustment? Why would you? Because here we are talking of underspending. So what it means then is that you cannot begin to budget for what you don't have. The department would have immediately after receipt of such funds began then to prepare. But it doesn't look like, and one would now be eager as a person to know, that money which was pumped into the department as some kind of intervention, did it work as an intervention fund in reality? Or though it was coined as intervention fund, but immediately it flew into the coffers of the department, it then began to flow the normal, ordinary way, regardless of the agency that the money was put in for. Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Lendana. Let me take your bonding lady, Lapik Bambi, which is in Gag.
Yes. Deben is cold. Deben is cold there.
It's your real global warming if people complain in Deben about being cold. Honorable Sarupen, please come in.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. And Chair, let me also welcome the presentation. I think, Chair, with regards to the various programs, it's clear that this department has quite a large scope and a large mandate, and that there is a lot going on. But with regards to some of the specifics, and I think the biggest underspender here was forestry management. I note that the forestry's program was moved from two previous departments into this department. I'd just like to get an understanding of when this was moved from the 1st of April 2020. Prior to that move, what contingency planning was put into place to begin to understand how this program operated and so on, so the department was able to get moving immediately on how they were going to manage this, and more importantly, what changes they're going to make. And then, Chair, more generally, with regards to the department, its budget, and so on, there are things that this department does, like air quality management and so on, that is actually being duplicated by provincial governments and local governments. Lots of local governments, at least metros I know, have air quality management systems and monitoring stations and so on in place, for example. I would like to get an understanding of whether or not the department actually works with other tiers of government and spheres of government that are doing the same work to minimize costs and duplication. Because from where I sit, looking at a lot of these programs and knowing what's being done in provinces and in local government, I am concerned that government is spending a lot of money duplicating these programs. Thanks very much, Chair.
Thank you. Honorable Sarupen. Honorable Sangani, please come in.
Thank you very much, Chair. I am a bit down with flu, so if I cough throughout my questions, please just bear with me. I am suffering a terrible flu.
No problem.
Okay, thanks, Chair. I fully agree with the Honorable Mlenzang in terms of the department's performance. And I still haven't got, even throughout the presentation, a view that we won't sit again next year with the same underspending or in the department, or the same not achieving their targets in this department. So it's quite concerning that the department is at 68% of the targets, and then they are telling us about partial achievement. When we come to appropriations committees, either you achieve or you have not achieved. We don't want things like partial, because we are committed that focus on and following where the money of government is going. Now, my question, one of our members already asked, what is the current status of the ocean economy master plan? I just want emphasis on that again. And then why is there less than 5% of the deep sea trawl lake allocated to Eastern Cape, yet then more than 95% is in the hands of Western Cape companies? Shouldn't there be a plan to increase the allocation to the Eastern Cape fishing companies as well? And number two, why is INJ having 32% of the tech, the total allowable catch of the deep sea trawl lake, and Sea Harvest is having 37% of the same tech? Why is it in that amount, and these big companies are just having larger percentages, Chair, than your companies, your small scale fishing companies? And then when does the department intend to announce the appeals for the 2021 fishing rights, considering the fact that the lobster season is going to start within months from now? If they can tell us that. And then on the last one, on the EPWP, I think many of our members have asked this, and it's still shocking that the department is outsourcing this component of EPW. Shouldn't the department doing it directly from themselves and stop outsourcing this component? And the one on disability, there was a slide that the department shows on disability, Chair, that I think the DG said it's 0%, but there was 3 million. And I think she has noted in many of the others, in terms of women, they have spent so much, in terms of youth, they have spent so much. And when it came to the disabilities, she said 3 million, but yet the percentage is zero. So where did the 3 million go off to? And in terms of what steps have the department taken in speedily addressing the smaller scale fishing rights? I think Ms. Su have said they will only be available in May, but there are small scale communities that are suffering, and this is the income. And if we're only going to address that within May from now, what are we saying from now up till May, the small-scale communities that are using this as a livelihood are living on? Shouldn't we address it on a much more faster pace in order for them to also take part within the fishing season to improve their livelihoods? Thank you very much, Chair.
Honorable Kangweni, thank you very much. You did very well. If you hadn't told us that you are not feeling well, we would not have picked it up. Honorable Peters, please come in.
Yes, Chair. Chairperson, I think I'm also in a very bad situation with regard to load shedding. And if you can allow me to switch off my video, like Honorable Mlenza, and I'm sure you have seen I'm not the robot. Is it agreed, Chair?
Please continue, Honorable Peters.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. And I want to take this opportunity to thank the Minister and Deputy Minister, as well as the DG and the DDG who made a presentation. Chairperson, I think I'm the happiest woman to actually acknowledge that this department is women-led. You know, if you look at the Minister, the Deputy Minister, and the DG and DDGs that are there, I think I can say Malibongwe Kamalama Koskas. Let me start.
Malibongwe, I left it for you. I left it for you.
Malibongwe.
Thank you. I think maybe my question would really start with the matters related to exactly what I just said about being women-led. I didn't hear from the department, maybe when they make presentations to the portfolio committee, they do raise those particular issues about their programs related to women in forestry or women in environment and forestry, and equally the youth in forestry and environment, because it would be important for us to know whether there are such programs over and above those that you have for the suppliers to be able to be compliant to the requirements for a service required or tender programs in the department. But I also want to know, taking from what Honorable Ntlangwini raised about companies like ANJ and Bosi Harvest, do they have, or is the department demanding of them to have a enterprise development a program where they would consciously be responsible for taking the previously disadvantaged community from beginning right up to probably a certain percentage of commercialization of their sea or marine operations? The other thing is related to those very big commercial enterprises. There were allegations in the past about them being found at fault for overfishing. Is that situation still prevalent? And what is the department with law enforcement agencies doing to be able to address that particular situation? And also, Chairperson, I would want to know from the department, there are communities, and I will make an example, like the communities of the Northern Cape, your Mahareng, your Dikgatlhong, and the Sianuma municipal areas in the Northern Cape, where you find communities that are living near to the rivers. Do they need fishing rights? Because I would believe some of those people from those communities are fishing for the stomach. And some of them are fishing to be able to make a quick buck to keep the home fires burning. So it would be important for us to know what the department is doing to support those communities. Because I heard I think it was the DG or DDG speaking about leisure fishing. I won't say that is leisure fishing, because it's not people just who go over a weekend to go and teach children or to go and play in the water and then catch some few fish. Those ones are people who literally, because of proximity to the river, would really want to eat from the river. There was one colleague in my previous life from the DRC who was saying that he was surprised that with so many waterways in South Africa, fish is not like a staple food in South Africa. So I think I also want to know why we don't encourage these communities. On slide 16, I mean, there's that percentage of expenditure on women. I feel that this is grossly inadequate because Honorable Sangwini spoke about the issue of the people with disabilities, but considering that this department is women-led, we can have about 16, the percentage being so low for the expenditure on women. The other thing on slide 14, Chairperson, I'm going back with the slides. The DG is reflected on internal controls as never having existed in the department. Is it the 2020 Department of Forestry and Environment, or is the process that was taken from the Department of DAF in establishing this new Department of DFFE? Was the finance and admin functions not devolved also to this new department? Or in the old Department of Environmental Affairs, was there no internal controls that could continue with the function? Because I can't take it that we are informed in 2022 that there was no internal controls, or they never existed in a department like a DFFE when initially it used to exist as DIA, and functions, some of the functions were delegated, for a lack of a better word, from DAF. The other thing that I want to find out, Chairperson, is the 30 days non-payment of service providers a contributing factor to the underspending? And I also want to know, because some departments use the funds from the underspending as resources available for MDS. Is that situation also prevailing in the Department of Forestry and Fisheries? The other thing, Chairperson, I want to just indicate to the Minister that the community of Port St. John's, as well as the part of a Pondoland, raised concerns about some of the fishing, for a lack of a better word, I would say pirates, being seen literally fishing illegally in the South African waters. What is the department Department of Transport, as well as through SAMHSA, and the Department of Forestry and Fisheries, doing with law enforcement officers to safeguard the South African marine life? Because if the community sees that, and especially the Queen Mother in that area indicating that at night you literally see those trawlers for working out in the deep seas, and you would be surprised that the inspectors are saying there is a wild horses in the sea at night. So I don't know what is the problem. The other thing is with regard to the EPWP. The department indicates that they bid for an additional 318 million in 2021 to implement the EPWP program. Is the Working for Water program part of this? I'm raising this, Chairperson, because you'd remember, if my mind serves me well, when we had the Department of Water Affairs, I asked the question about Working for Water, and the response was that the Working for Water program is under Environmental Affairs. So I want to know whether the 18 that was requested was actually received from National Treasury, and what was the projected time frame for implementation of these projects as per the business plan. And I would believe, Chairperson, that the EPWP is an essential pathway for unemployed youth to access the training system or employment support programs and consistent underspending in this particular program undermines government's efforts to address the pandemic of youth unemployment. And I also want to know, Chairperson, whether the, I think I've asked the question related to the 30 days and the issues related to climate change, Chairperson. I want to know, what is the department doing in making it possible that rather than us seeing the department and other role players participating in the COP processes, the communities are educated adequately? Because I believe that this is one of the key areas that young people could be trained to be able to go out and educate the community about the issues related to how we as human beings contribute towards this environmental degradation that leads to the challenges of impacts of climate change. But also, it is important that we know that some of the resources that we have are not infinite. And how do we as communities contribute to protecting our environment? And I would believe that this department, working together with the Department of Basic Education in particular, and some of the community organizations, could allow for each and every community where municipalities work together with your department minister to educate the public. But also the issues related to
now let me leave it for now. That one I'll raise at another platform. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Peters. Honorable Sheikh, please come in.
Thank you, Chairperson. Yeah, thank you very much for that presentation. All right, my first question is irregular contracts. That's what you've identified and picked up a whole lot of them. What has happened to them? What were the consequences for those that were responsible for these irregular contracts? Could you give us an explanation as far as that is concerned? You also talk repeatedly, of course, we've been hearing this, Standing Committee on Appropriations, like my colleagues have alluded to. Year in, year out, we hear the same things. However, many of these people are still in their positions, many of whom even receive big bonuses. Okay, but very little or nothing has improved over a period of time. Could you advise what the position is in terms of ensuring that you have the capacity? And I must say that I often sympathize with ministers and deputy ministers because they are moved around from one portfolio to another one, and they inherit departments that are quite often in the intensive care unit. So it's not an easy decision. Generally to be able to deal with these challenges. Now, I'd like you to all tell me, and we find this often, Chair will agree with me, many departments have a problem, particularly in spending in the first quarter. Will you say this is poor planning or there's no planning well in advance in anticipation that for the new financial year, of course, we are going to get monies in the first term and needs to be spent timelessly? But more often than that is the fact that we then find that there's fiscal dumping in the last quarters because you want to actually meet your obligations in terms of spending. However, it is also here you find that the department in many sectors or branches, as you call, you've got underspending. And you do appreciate that when there's underspending, whilst I'll prefer there to be underspending than fiscal dumping, but underspending simply means that somebody has to suffer the consequences, and ultimately it's the people on the ground because you're not able to deliver. Like one of my colleagues have also alluded to the issue of 30 days. You don't pay on 30 days. It's a death penalty for some of these small businesses. But could you also tell us on the 30-day payment, are you experiencing what I know the Public Service Commission at one stage highlighted? And that was the levels of corruption in departments where they pay service providers so that they get a kickback. When they don't get kickbacks, then they delay payments to these small service providers. Now, I know there's a lot of emphasis on small businesses, BEE, and things like that. I want you to tell us, and honestly, the success rate. Do some of these people have the capacity? Are we giving them the contract because we want to comply in terms of BEE and gender and other aspects? But are we getting, you know, success? Are they delivering on time? Do they have the capacity to be able to do that? I know you've been talking about that. You even have workshops for these people. Yeah. Now, every department, it seems like, Chairperson, here comes, have got vacancies despite having a 36% unemployment rate and youth among 70 to 80% in the country. Now, what is really the problem when every department that comes has vacancies after vacancies? Are we saying that despite the number of unemployed people in this country, despite the amount of money we're spending on education in this country, we do not have the necessary capacity? And if that is the case, are you, Minister, Deputy Minister, are you speaking with your colleagues in the different, in the relevant authorities to be able to address this, that you're not able to acquire the skills and the capacity based on the availability of the unemployed in this country who have, by the way, have got the necessary qualifications, but you can't convert that to success or and we found this often that sometimes experience is not good enough and the qualifications means nothing. You need a mix of both together with ethics and values. And now, I want to come to the issue of forestry and transformation. And I think my colleagues have spoken. Clearly, Minister, there is very little or no transformation. When you talk about the fishing industry and very importantly on the forestry, I hope that someday you will go with me to the Sitsikama area, where these entire communities, right from Plettenberg Bay, right up to Humansdorp and Moon, all rely totally on forestry. And this particular sector is controlled by the big guns, suppressing them, not even creating, allowing an opportunity for them to get into the sector. And the same thing with the fishing industry. You know, we, the small scale fishers, I give you a good example. You know, snook is by virtue one of the most important things that people in the Western Cape survive on by buying and selling snook. And these small scale fishers are having a problem. And one of the things that I picked up in my discussions with them is that the large scale big fishing companies, and yes, you are giving quotas to these people from outside of the country, but really charity begins at home. But what is happening is these big scale fishers, I am told, Chairperson, they use this massive trawlers and things of this. And they deep into the sea, and that and the process that they are, or the mechanism that they use, prevents these snook and things to come closer to the shore so the small-scale fishermen can get access to it. They're actually taking it away deeper in so that they could get it, and that is why you quite often find the small-scale fishermen don't have snook available that you normally find that they're selling on the street and as a form of small business or income for them. I'd like us you to tell us what can you do about transformation, particularly, and you know, we always brag about small business and SMEs and how we can create jobs. But I promise you, Minister, to you, Chair, there is so much of red tape and these people do not find a conducive environment or some platform created by departments like yourself, so that these people can come and communicate with you at that level. There's so much of red tape, they can't even get to you, Minister. That's some of the problems that they highlight to us that they are experiencing all the time. I will stop there for now, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Sheikh. Thank you, Honorable Members, for raising the issues that you have raised. Let me also join you, honorable members, in welcoming the presentation by the minister and the DG and the DDG, and also welcome the commitment from the department to deal with the issues which lead to underperformance and underspending. I think I'll say more about that a little bit later. But to start with my question first, let me say, DG, listening to the many issues around what must happen at SCM and so on and so forth, to try and make sure that I think for where I'm seated, those are basic management things, which our assumption from where we are is that we employ the best of the best. We don't need to even ask to insource people because people are appointed there. The people of South Africa pay them salaries to do that. We don't pay them so that they can go out and get other people. I think we can channel that money if we want to give it to other people. So we can directly channel that money to them. The fact that we employ people, the assumption is that when the people of South Africa pay those people, it's because they've got the requisite skills. Those skills that they must upgrade is more about upgrading the skills that they already have. Otherwise, it would mean that in the first place, with the people that were employed were wrong people. So most of the things that must happen, we say there are more of endogenous factors. They are controllable. They are within our control and so on. And these are the things that we expect to be there in the department. And I'm just, if you could underline that, we as this committee, as you said, that in our interaction with the minister, the deputy minister, and we started looking at when you deal with the KPIs, started looking at the strategic issues. That's what we expect. The day-to-day running of an organization of the department, for us, those are given. We don't even need to talk about them. But since you have identified them as a problem, please deal with them. There's a saying which says, impactful managers are the ones who kill the snake when they see it. They don't go out and look for consultants to say, how do I kill the snake? And some of the things with the comments, and I would like to hear comments, was saying the 54% achievement in fishery is a big worry to us for a number of reasons, but mainly it also talks to food security. We know that with what we are going through, food security is an issue. So I would like to hear your educated guess that where do you think will end this year? I haven't even spoken about the implications of this in the economy and so on and so forth. Just talking about the food.
We can't hear you, Chair. Honourable Chair, can we request you switch off your video? We can't hear you. Comrade Chair, switch off your video, please.
Honourable Kaiso. Honourable Kaiso, are you still in the platform?
Honourable
Minister.
Hold the phone for long for the chairperson. I propose, Comrade Lenzana, you hold the board.
Okay, but here you come. Chairperson? Chairperson, are you back? Chairperson? Chairperson, we can't hear you, Chairperson. Yeah, you are better now.
Continue.
Okay, no, it's fine. It's fine. Honorable Minister.
Can you hear
me? Yes, I can hear you, Chair, but so long, let's give Honorable Minister and the team to respond. And then when the chairperson is back, he will then come in, Honorable Minister, to finalize his comments, if you don't mind. Are you happy with that?
Yes, thank you very much, Honorable Lenzana. And thank you very much to all the members for the questions. Let me pick up where I started, because many members have asked the question, what do I feel about the underperformance of these branches? I'm very far from happy, I can assure you. So I have made it clear inside the department. I've made it clear at the Portfolio Committee on the Environment, Forestry and Fisheries, and I'll make it clear here again. There's no protection in our department for those who underperform. And the reason we had the meeting that we had on the 5th of May was in order to instruct the head of department to implement the formal performance management process. Honourable members have asked the question, what is the consequence? So what we did was we got advice from the relevant HR section. What do you do when people underperform? And the advice is there's a performance management process, which is a formal process. And essentially, I'm sure, DG, you have the slide here that shows what that process is. We are in that process. And ultimately, if there is no improvement, it first of all leads to the performance improvement plan, then it can lead to coaching, but ultimately it leads to a disciplinary process. That is the process laid down by law that departments and ministers have to follow when colleagues underperform. So those who have underperformed are formally in that process as myself and the deputy minister instructed the DG to do. Of course, if they feel that they themselves have staff who are underperforming, they can put their staff into that process. That is their right as managers. But there's no air cover from me. So they can make promises in this committee. What I'm promising you is we are monitoring their performance and we will go through the entire consequence management process if necessary. I'm not promising you that they're going to improve. I'm promising you that we will take the necessary steps. They can promise you that they will improve, and I would be happy that we give them that opportunity. I don't think that we have skills problems in our department. I think that our vacancy rate is not excessive. We have very highly skilled people in our department, and we have very experienced people in our department. And if you have to look at all of the DDGs, they have long CVs with qualifications and long CVs when it comes to relevant experience. I think the issue is whether we are all clear that our failure to perform impacts on the lives of ordinary South Africans. And that is what members of the committee have been expressing today. Because I'm assuming that if we're clear about that, we will take the necessary action to improve on our performance. Let me just say something about the transition from the forestry branch to our department. In 2019, when we took over the branch, the former Director General of the department, Ms. Nosipho Dlaba, visited, she went on a tour of all the forestry stations in the country. And she did that to appraise herself of the situation with regard to performance in those different forestry stations, but also with regard to what needed to be done. And it was then that we began with the forestry master plan. And I think fundamental to the forestry master plan is a recognition that there is an important opportunity for those who have historically been excluded from the forestry industry to participate in that industry through a process that we call community forestry associations. And under the guidance of the Deputy Minister, who is directly responsible for forestry, we have begun to launch those community forestry agreements, utilizing what we call the Category B and C forests. And I think that this is a very important exercise, and the branch and the DG can say a little bit more about how we're trying to fast track those community forestry agreements and the partnerships that exist with the formal industry to enable newcomers to the industry to be able to replant forests and to have an offtake agreement once those particular forests mature. I think that I said in the beginning, colleagues, that I really don't want to comment on fishing because I'm considering the appeals. What we are trying to do with the appeals is to begin with the very small sectors where there are limited appeals and conclude those, and then to proceed with lionfish, which is where you will find a lot of the smaller commercial players. The lobster fishery was not reallocated. It's not under appeal. There are lobster quotas that will be allocated, so that fishery is not affected by the FRAP process. But I really don't want to comment on the other issues that colleagues have been raising, because these are the subject of appeals. And one has to go through the relevant statutory processes in this regard. Gigi, I'm going to hand over to you. Let me just say something. Honourable Sarapen, you've raised the issue of air quality. Let me explain to you that all environmental law, with the exception of fisheries and forestry where you're dealing with a national resource, all other aspects of environmental law have concomitant powers at provincial and local government level. And we have a very strong MINMEC structure that is representative both of the MECs and the mayors, and as well as SALGA. And that is where we coordinate all of the work that we would be doing as a department. There are two areas where subnational government underperforms. Air quality is one of them. The responsibility for issuing air quality licenses and ensuring compliance with air quality licenses is a municipal function, and it is not adequately undertaken by the majority of our municipalities for two reasons. The one is that many municipalities have not ensured that their air quality monitoring stations are in good order. And the second reason is that there is inadequate understanding of the compliance requirements with regard to air quality. And this is something that we have a major focus on, including utilizing the South African Weather Bureau monitoring stations so that we are able to monitor air quality. So I would want to say to you that when it comes to air quality, sadly, subnational government is not always coming to the party. And unfortunately, far from having a situation where there's a duplication of resources, we often find a situation where we're having to bail out subnational government in order to maintain appropriate standards of air quality monitoring. And a similar situation goes with regard to waste management, and I wouldn't want to be going into that today. Just on the climate change issue, I think the point that is being raised about public education around climate change is an incredibly important point. We have worked with all provinces and all municipalities to ensure that they have climate change response strategies. Because one of the things you would understand about our country is that because we are a mega biodiverse country, in other words, a country that has deserts, dry, arid areas, subtropical areas, coastal areas, and so on and so on, we are also a country that is going to be impacted on by every consequence of climate change. So we will face sea level rise, we will face flooding, we will face drought, we will face wildfires, and we will face heat waves. All of those things are going to affect our country, but not all of them will affect all areas of our country equally. So it's very important that subnational government is involved in active partnerships with civil society so that civil society understands what the implications of climate change is going to be. And I can share with you that when I visited the city of Eteguini after the floods, one will find partnerships between the municipality and community-based organizations that are where communities are living in flood zones, where lives were saved during the flooding as a result of the public education that had been done and the early warning systems that the communities themselves had put into place. But I can also share with the Honourable Member that we do have in the life orientation and in the geography and biology syllabuses, there are a whole range of issues that relate to our portfolio, and we also have partnerships with schools where we enhance understanding of some of these issues. Obviously, if budgets were to permit, I would like to do a lot more because I do believe that public education in this area is terribly important because people do need to have the power to take steps to protect themselves in the face of climate change. Let me pause there. Chair, I don't know, I see your hand is up. Do you want me to pause before I hand to the DG and the team to answer all the questions?
Your hand is up. Now continue, Honourable Minister.
Thank you very much, Chair, Acting Chair. Let me hand over to DG, and DG will also allocate amongst the team. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair, and thank you, Minister. I'm going to request that the DDGs concerned respond to the respective areas, especially those areas where, as a department, we have not performed. And as Minister highlights, us as management, it's not an area where we are really proud about, given that this is affecting people on the ground if services are not delivered as expected. So I'm going to request that the DDG or forestry respond to the forestry-related matters, and I think Minister has highlighted at a high level around our community forest agreements and some of the transformation programs that we have on the ground. And she will be followed by the DDG of environmental programs. There's quite a number of issues that are coming through, and also on environmental programs. And the acting DDG Oceans and Coast will just highlight the status of the master plan, which came out very strongly in terms of the committee wanting to know where are we, because some of the matters being raised are matters that that plan needs to be pursuing, and we need to fast track so that there's implementation in as far as that plan is concerned. I'm also then going to request the CFO to talk to some of the aspects, payment within 30 days, and also other aspects that honorable members have raised for clarity. And then I will come back. I think Minister has responded to the issues of climate change and the air quality matters. I think CFO will deal with that, and also the National Treasury legislation. And I think we take note, Honorable Matafa, on your comment that you raised and are seeking a legal opinion, given that the set aside are actually there to assist us to empower the previously disadvantaged individuals, and ensure that we have a redistribution in as far as the economy is concerned. Let me hand over to DDG Forestry. I will then come at the end, Honorable Acting Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, DG. Good morning to the Honorable Acting Chair, Honorable Minister, Deputy Minister, and Honorable Members. In terms of forestry, I will try and cluster the questions into two main themes. One would be what is being done with regards to underperformance and underspending. And then the second one will deal with issues related to transformation that has been asked by the different honorable members. Now, in terms of issues related to performance and understanding, as indicated by the DG, the branch led by myself is in an improvement plan. And this improvement plan is get contribution from their respective chief directors who have been identified that there are challenges there. So that issues related to them having their own improvement plans are drafted and are monitored throughout. We're now on a very continuous basis, and frequently as monthly, the chief directors through their own teams then report on what they are doing in terms of making sure that there is that improvement. And based on those reports and those interventions, this is then fed into the discussion that I have with the DG as well on a more regular basis. What also we have done is working closely with the support branches, mainly the branch of the CFO, where we are able to track expenditure, but also procurement-related matters to see where the bottlenecks are and to unlock those bottlenecks to make sure that there is spending that does take place within the branch. So the chief directors themselves, as much as I also understand that if there is no improvement, then a formal disciplinary process will follow. There is that understanding as well within the branch. We have also held discussions with all the SMS members, including middle management, which are your deputy directors, to make sure that everyone is on track and understands what underperformance and what understanding would mean. And if it continues, what measures would be taken to make sure that everyone is able to contribute and improve the spending. Then one other thing that we've done is to look at our needs per year in terms of procurement and made sure that instead of having these short-term contracts, they become multi-year contracts. For instance, when we're looking at, we know that each year we will need seedlings for us to be able to plant in the plantations or provision of equipment and all of those things. So those are now done as multi-year contracts to make sure that there is there are no gaps, but at the same time, there is better management of those contracts and to make sure that as they lapse, there are measures in place to make sure that there's new contracts in place or there's renewal depending on the circumstances. And then in terms of transformation, this has been asked by a couple of members in line with the implementation of the of the master plan. The master plan itself looks at five main commitments, mainly the investment, mainly by the industry, the jobs that would need to be created, looks at inclusivity, which is aligned to the forest sector charter that already the forestry sector has in terms of making sure that there is transformation within the sector. It also looks at issues related to competitiveness, which then looks at how do we improve timber yield with the recognition that there isn't a lot of fiber available. So the fiber that is available must then be used effectively by the different SMEs, especially in the sawmilling sector, where there's that improvement and also in terms of their recovery rates. And then it also looks at measures that must be put in place to open up investment and job opportunities. So based on those five commitments, there are undertakings that we as a department are responsible for. There are undertakings that the industry and other government departments and labor are responsible for. So in terms of us as a department, what we have done is, looking at the way that we have been structured, there has been the restructuring of the branch such that there is alignment in terms of what the master plan would require in terms of functions and the capacity that we have and the capacity that we will need and the change in terms of of the mandate that we will need to perform as a branch. Linked to that is the fact that as a department, we want to move away from direct management of plantations, which will then contribute towards the implementation of the master plan in the sense that there will be the plantations would be brought back into production through mechanisms such as leasing, which is catered for in our Act, and also through the community forestry agreements that have already been alluded to. So we are fast-tracking that process such that what we are planning to do is that within the next 6 months, we would like to have all the plantations within the Western Cape list out and agreements signed such that we can get private sector working with us and, as government and with the communities to make sure that those areas are better managed. In the same vein, with the community forest agreements, there's areas that have been targeted, where we want to have all those community forestry agreements finalized within the next 6 months, where we want to also make sure that there is alignment with the private sector for them to provide their strategic support to the communities where there would be investment. And then as a department, we can provide a technical support, post-settlement support, and issues related to training. So those are the two main areas that we are looking at in ensuring that there is transformation, but also there is making sure that the areas that are managed, especially by us as a department, are better management, are better managed to improve the availability of the fiber. Then the second part to the role of the department in terms of the master plan, especially with regards to ensuring that there is fiber availability, is related to providing support to the sector, especially communities or SMMEs, on getting environmental impact assessments conducted. We have identified in the past year 30,000 hectares that would go through that process, and the request for proposals to get the environmental impact assessments has been issued out. So we're going to go through a process of evaluation, and then that a process can start to go ahead. I think then in relation to those two main issues, what underpins the principles of both the CFA and the leases and the identification of areas for afforestation is issues related to land rights, where we want to identify communities that have land rights in those areas so that they are part of the process to improve or to fast track issues related to transformation, issues related to local beneficiation, which will also have an impact towards improvement in terms of transformation. I think lastly, Honorable Chair, what I can mention is that in terms of the greening programs that we have, especially where we work closely with the municipalities, we have encouraged municipalities to make sure that in their greening programs, they include youth and women in making sure that their greening plans and their implementation of the greening programs are fast-tracked. Based on this, we have a competition that we call the Upper City Awards, which recognizes these municipalities. And we do make sure that when we look at the work that the municipalities are doing, we also make an effort to look at how has the municipality brought in women and youth in those greening programs. And then the municipality that shows that it's doing well in those areas then gets to be recognized through this program. In doing this, we then improve in terms of making sure that there are more trees planted on the ground, and then that contributes towards our national target. I think, DJ, from my side, I will end here, and I will get advice if I may have left something. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Can we have EP DDG?
Thank you, DG. Greetings, Honorable Acting Honorable Chair, Minister, Deputy Minister, and the members. From my side, I will start off with an acknowledgement in terms of the issues, the concerns that were raised around performance, highlighting that, yes, I am working closely with the DG and my team in implementing. We've had to develop and implement an improvement plan as well, which I monitor on a regular basis weekly, just to check with how we are faring as a branch in terms of the APP, but also in terms of the expenditure, and I have to feedback to the DG regularly on that basis. In addition to the matters that the DG had highlighted in her input in terms of the other concerns relating to SCM, as a branch, we had to, working with my colleagues, had to look inward and identify constraints that were or aspects that were within our control as a branch that affected our performance. And in that regard, we've had to introduce business processes where we did not have business processes because such was affecting the efficiency of how we're doing business as a branch. But also another matter that may not necessarily, it may sound trivial, but it's a critical matter because it then affected the extent to which we're able to report on the Department of Public Works and Infrastructure system on the TREPS expanded public works programs in terms of their ability to create work opportunities and also full-time equivalents. So in that regard, we've had to, as a branch, strengthen our capacity and re-engineer how we approach data management so that we will then be able to reduce the extent to which we're having challenges in terms of our data being rejected, which unfortunately and ultimately affected our final report in terms of work opportunities created and also FTEs. I would also like to highlight that being the key branch or one of the branches, the main branches affected by the transition that moved the department from a prepayment to a system wherein we pay for goods and services delivered. Within the branch itself, we've had to invest in terms of building and strengthening contract and project management training for those colleagues who are responsible for the function. And also just to be able to make sure that as a branch, we are able to contribute to the department achieving its APP targets. We had to review and also revise our scope of engagement with the entities of the department in how we work with them in relation to the APP. And as such, that has helped us in terms of improving performance. I would then like to just highlight that over and above is what I indicated as the regular monitoring of performance and the regular engagement with the DG. I would like to then go into the questions that were raised by Honorable Mlenzana and also Honorable Ndlangwini and Honorable Peters. That I've highlighted or I've alluded to other measures that we're taking at a management level in terms of improving performance within the branch, which we've committed to. And in relation to the question that was raised on the employment stimulus, the branch was one of the recipients of the employment stimulus in the first tranche, I think it was 2020-2021. And in 2021-2022, the stimulus benefit was, the stimulus allocation was allocated to our entities, which the DG alluded to. So in terms of the first tranche, the expenditure in that regard, we were able to spend, but not fully spend what was allocated because we had received it. I think it was in the third quarter of that financial year. And because of processes that we had to go through in terms of amending existing contracts and putting things in place so that we as a department will be able to account for the additional funding allocated, we were not able to conclude those processes in all instances that would have then allowed us to spend what was allocated. But also, I would also like to just highlight that the Working for Water program is part of the Natural Resources Management portfolio, which is part of the Environmental Programs branch. And it is an area where, in terms of the extent of performance, as I indicated earlier, it was affected mainly by the transition from the pre-advanced to the payment of goods and services, which transition was then associated with a number of processes that we as a department had to put in place to make sure that we were able to deliver as committed in terms of the APP. And on the issue that was raised by Honorable Ndlangwini in terms of outsourcing, I would like to highlight that, yes, we've had to review the extent to which we'll be able to manage projects internally within the department, and as such, introduced an in-house model, project management model for some of our areas. We are, however, limited in terms of the extent to which we can apply that model across the branch. For example, in certain biodiversity infrastructure projects and the Working on Fire program as an example, and other wetland rehabilitation projects, we are very limited and as such have to continue relying on service providers. The role of our officials in that regard then becomes the capacity that we have to strengthen in terms of strengthening contract management and project management to ensure that one, we are able to identify issues of underperformance on time, correct them on time before the end of each quarter so that we do not face the challenges that we faced previously in terms of underperformance. Within the program itself, I think there was another matter that was raised in terms of the involvement of youth. Yes, we do have targets in terms of the EPWP aspect as far as employment of youth is concerned within the branch as far as EPWP is concerned. But we do have other programs where it's still employment, but there's a benefit in terms of the youth playing a role in terms of creating awareness around environmental management issues. And those include youth that we've located at municipalities in terms of the YCOP, the youth environmental services programs, and other aspects such as the Good Green Deeds, wherein there's a part of the scope of work and the scope of responsibilities is creating awareness around environmental management issues. And on the issues where, okay, the second allocation I've responded to in terms of the 318, and DJ, I think that's what I noted in terms of the notes that I made. If I've missed out on anything, I will be guided by yourself. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Can we simply have Acting DDG Oceans and Coast just on the master plan briefly?
DG and honourable members, can I just advise you that I'm about to get load shedding? So if I get disconnected while I'm changing systems, please just understand. Thanks.
Okay, that's fine. That's fine, honourable minister.
Okay. Thank you, honourable chair and honourable minister, honourable deputy minister, and the DG, and honourable members. With your permission, honourable chair, given my limited bandwidth here, I would be very grateful to you if you will allow me to switch off my camera, because I will be risking getting cut off.
That's fine. At least we have seen that you are not a robot.
Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Chair. Mine is just to give a brief statement as to where or how far we've gone with the Oceans Economy Master Plan. Currently, we do have a draft version 4.1, which on its own is a very robust document. But we are currently working on finalizing the implementation plans and in the same vein whilst updating version 4.1. You will recall, honorable members, that there are five areas in our Oceans Economy Master Plan, which is marine manufacturing and repairs. There is also marine transport, which includes freight logistics and cargo. There is also aquaculture, which is inclusive of both freshwater and marine. There is also fisheries, particularly small scale, and then the commercial. And lastly, it will be the offshore oil and gas. And the implementation plans for those are almost done. And what we are looking for, or the date of completion that we are looking at, is the end of November this year. But having said that, I would like to raise the fact that there are still some minor issues that we're dealing, working very diligently with the colleagues from fisheries management, where we are trying to finalize the whole issue of small-scale co-ops, particularly in the Western Cape. And in the Eastern and North and Eastern and Eastern Cape and KwaZulu-Natal, there have been consultations which were inclusive of marine spatial planning and marine protected areas together with small-scale fisheries, because in those areas, when it comes into small-scale fisheries, there are co-ops that are in existence. So we are working towards that end of November, and then what we are having as a target date to take the product through the cabinet processes is the first set of cluster meetings in February of 2023. I will stop there for now. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Lifikizolo. Let me ask DDG Fisheries to respond. There were a number of issues for fisheries.
Thank you very much again, honourable members. Yes, there were quite a few issues for
If she can switch off the video, perhaps.
Yes, I'm trying to ask her to do that. Maybe let me ask the CFO to respond while we're getting her to sort out her connectivity. Thank you, Chair.
That will be fine.
Thank you, DG. Good morning to the Honourable Chairperson, the Honourable Minister and the DM, and the Honourable Members of the Committee. Chairperson, can I request that I also switch off my camera just to manage the strength of the audio?
Yes, you may.
Thank you so much, Chairperson. On my side, I will just start where the DGEP left off, regarding the additional allocation that we received for 318 million. I think there was a question which was requested to clarify when exactly the department received that money. We received it at the end of January 2022. This is because the final adjusted appropriation was promulgated on the 18th of January 2022. So when we received it at the end of January, it was not feasible enough to spend the money before the end of the financial year, which ended 31st of March. So that was the first question that was requested. Then the second part, there was a question regarding the transformation agenda that we need to drive as the department. What we did in our standard terms of reference, we had included a clause that says that certain tenders, when we are even advertising them, there is a pre-qualification criteria where we're saying only QSEs or EMEs can bid, which are 51% black owned by black women. That was the standard terms of reference that we developed. So when the tenders closed and as we're at the evaluation stages, we received a complaint and a challenge that we are not constitutional in the manner in which we are driving our transformation agenda. We went out to look for a legal opinion as the department, and we were also advised that that is not in line with the Act, because even our internal policy has to be informed by the law, and therefore should we have proceeded with those bids, they would have been non-compliant and any expenditure that will accrue out of those contracts will be irregular expenditure. So that is what the 2017 Triple PFA is now limiting us in driving the transformation and putting those pre-qualifications. Due to the size of the department, we are advised that yes, there is a compensation of employees ceiling, and therefore we could not expand on the structure for the CF for the SCM branch. So what we did, we went out and looked for a service that will assist us with quality assurance of our bids and our documents and our standard compliance issues. So the additional capacity and additional support that we sought is not coming from the compensation of employees because it's a service in nature and therefore it's part of goods and services. It's not part of the compensation of employees budget. Then on the issues around the payment within 30 days, as at the end of the financial year 2021-22, 99% of our invoices were paid within 30 days. And if we look at the size of the accruals of the department, most of all the accruals that we reported at year end were within 30 days. So it's not like we keep invoices and pay them later or we are trying to find issues. The accruals that we reported were within 30 days and 99% of those invoices were being paid. Then regarding the Directorate for Internal Control, in the department, we never had that directorate as a standalone. The functions were embedded in each and every branch. However, with the size that grew in the department on the core functions, we went back to National Treasury and DPSA and requested that we utilize the generic structure that was created by National Treasury in collaboration with DPSA, whereby there is a separate directorate that will look at the internal control deficiencies of the department and try to improve on that area. So the reason even National Treasury considered that part is because it's coming from the generic structure that was created. So that is the new structure now that we have in the department to assist us with all the deficiencies that have been identified by the internal audit and also by the AGSA. We have advertised the director internal control. The interviews in that regard were taken even yesterday, looking for a specific directorate that will drive and assist the department in improving and intensifying the control space. Then there was a question regarding the fiscal dumping. If you look at slide number 7, we tried to separate the number or the percentage of expenditure that was incurred on a quarterly basis. If you look on that slide, quarter 4, we only spent 22%, which demonstrates that, yes, at the end of the financial year, it's not like we tried and push for us to accelerate the expenditure by increasing our transfers and maybe be seen as if there is fiscal dumping. In quarter 4, we only spent 22% of the allocated budget. Thank you so much, Honorable Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. With your permission, can I hand over to Ms. Middleton, DDG Fisheries? She's back online.
Yes. Let her continue.
Afternoon again. Morning and apologies. I think I'm also started load shedding. So I was saying the first set of questions were from Honourable Matafa regarding the relevant license fees and application fees for the different sectors. And I was saying that there are different license fees or application fees for the three different fishing sectors. The first one is small scale, and the small scale fishing sector have been exempt from paying all application and license fees. The second sector is the recreational fishing sector. There they pay an annual fee of 96 Rand, and they get the recreational permit from any South African post office or from the department. And anybody over the age of 12 can apply for a recreational permit. And as I say, for a year, it is under 100 Rand. Then the next next sector is the commercial sector. And there you have varying application fees. depending on the commercial value of the species for which you are applying. So, for instance, in the FRAP 21 10 sectors, the first one was traditional lionfish, and their minister exempted them from paying any application fee because that sector you apply as individuals. So lionfish, there was no application fee. Tuna pole, for instance, the application fee was $1,645. Going up to the most expensive was hake deep sea trawl, where an application fee was 40,986 rand. So there are different fees payable and applicable to the different sectors. The next set of questions were, of hake fisheries in the hake sector. The first one is hake longline, the second one is hake inshore trawl, and the third one is hake deep sea trawl. Now, the hake fishery that is applicable and more prominent and dominant in the Eastern Cape is the hake inshore fisheries, where mainly caught around Port Elizabeth and Mossel Bay. And that fishery was allocated in 2015, where the Eastern Cape and Southern Cape applicants dominated, whereas the hake deep sea trawl is more a deep sea fishery off the coast of Cape Town, and that is why there were more Western Cape applicants in the deep sea trawl. And then you get a mixed bag in terms of hake longline. Fish around the Eastern Cape and the Western Cape. I think Minister has already indicated that the appeals do not apply to West Coast rock lobster because that was allocated in 2015. So the start of the lobster season in November will not have any impact on the small-scale fisheries. I must also indicate that although our target deadline for finalizing the allocation of fishing rights in the Western Cape to the small-scale cooperatives is March 2023, the current dispensation continues until such time that rights are allocated. So all the fishers, small-scale fishers and interim relief fishers in the Western Cape are allowed to carry on fishing until such time that the new dispensation is in place. Then in terms of questions around INJ and sea harvest, as Minister said, the appeals process is still underway. But I do need to indicate that they are and were the biggest players in the hake deep sea trawl industry. And in order to allow new applicants into the fishery, which was one of our requirements, they lost quite a big percentage of their previous TAC. We could only allow, or there would only be enough fish for new entrants by taking away from some of the big players. And all of the big players have lost fish compared to their previous allocations. Then there was a question from Honourable Dio Peters regarding recreational fishing and fishing in the Northern Cape in terms of rivers. And the Honourable Member is quite correct that that category of fishing in rivers is not covered by the recreational sector or recreational permit, and they are not fishing for sport or recreational purposes. They are fishing for food on the table. And there we have, the Fisheries Management Branch has a relatively new mandate of dealing with what are called inland and freshwater fisheries. It is a mandate that we only got a few years ago. And in this last financial year, one of our targets was the approval of the inland fisheries policy that has now been approved, and we are busy rolling out the inland fisheries policy. But unlike the marine space, this is going to be a concurrent function where we're going to have to work very closely with the provincial and municipal authorities, as well as other government organizations like Department of Water Affairs when we are dealing with dams and other waterways. Then also in terms of, there was a question about INJ and sea harvest and whether it was a requirement for them to, whether they were measured on employee shares in enterprise development. And the answer to that is yes. There were a number of questions, weighted scores under the transformation section, including the extent to which applicants paid employee share schemes, employee ownership schemes, their percentage wage bill, BEE procurement spend, skills development spend, employee learnership programs, new enterprise development programs, contributions to medical aid and provident funds, as well as new jobs that had been created during the course of the fishing rights, the previous fishing rights dispensation. So there was a suite of transformation questions that were weighted particularly for the big players. Then in terms of the questions from Honorable Sheikh, just firstly to indicate that we do not allocate fishing rights to foreign companies. You have to be a South African-owned majority company in order to qualify for a fishing right. That's unlike some of our neighbors like Namibia and Mauritius, who do allow foreign fishing. We do not. Also, there was, I think, Honorable Dio Peters raised the question about pirates and people foreign boats fishing illegally. We are not aware, we do not allow or permit foreign fishing vessels to fish in our waters, in our EEZ, exclusive economic zone. However, foreign vessels can request right of passage. So in other words, they are allowed to pass through our waters from Mozambique to Namibia or whatever their route is, but they may not fish in our waters, and we are able to monitor them through a vessel monitoring system, and we can tell at what speed they are traveling and whether there are any nets in the water. So we are able to monitor that. There was a question about working with other law enforcement agencies to curb illegal fishing and overfishing. And the answer to that is yes. We do have partnerships through Operation Pakisa, the Ocean Master, Enforcement Plan. And to be honest, the fisheries branch would not be able to deal with illegal fishing and IUU fishing on its own. We are reliant on partnerships with other law enforcement agencies, particularly SARS, SAPS, and the State Security Agency. And then our last one from Honorable Sheikh about the snook and the fact that Western Cape fishers are so reliant on snook. Snook is a species that is caught by small scale and the traditional lionfish fishery. Other sectors do catch it, but as bycatch. And there we limit, we have recently amended permit conditions to tighten up on other sectors and big trawl net fishers fishing for snook. We've limited the number of snook they're allowed to take, and they are not allowed to target snook directly, but they are allowed to catch snook as a bycatch. DG and Minister and Acting Chair, I think I hopefully have covered all the questions that were asked to fisheries. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair. I think there's just three points that I just want to highlight. The first one, Honourable Sheikh raised the issues on our irregular expenditure. What measures are we putting in place? What are we doing about it? We have done investigations, and some of the investigations are ongoing. Some have been concluded. The irregular expenditure was mainly emanating from prior years, I think from 2016, 2017, 2018. And we had to deal with that whole backlog in terms of investigations. Where investigations are complete, we have instituted consequence management, and we have presented the details in relation to consequence management. Where then we have found that there are certain officials that would have been responsible in terms of that irregular expenditure. So we are in a process, and our aim is to ensure that we then deal with the whole backlog and send through to National Treasury. We have sent through the first batch National Treasury, and they have condoned in the year 2021 an amount of about 300 million. And we have sent through almost close to about a billion. And our irregular mainly was as a result of the department awarding tenders then without having objectivity criteria when they advertise for the adverts. So objectivity criteria means that when you advertise your terms of reference, you must be very clear on how you're going to evaluate that tender. And you must have a clear criteria outlined so that then as a department, you are seen to have been objective and have been transparent in the way in which you do your evaluation. Those were found wanting. We have realized that the resources, it's not as in they was a loss. Services were delivered. It is a matter of processes not having been followed and also the criteria not having been adhered to. But we are working tirelessly, and as indicated, these are matters that the DM and the Minister wants a regular update on in terms of us ensuring that we begin to clean the history so that we then have proper controls moving forward and we eliminate any irregular expenditure moving forward. I think the other point Honorable Sanguini raised was on disability. We have rounded up that 3 million. When you look at the 3 million spent on disability, it's actually 3.8 million. When you then look at that as a proportion of the 1.8 billion, it's about 0.2, less than 1%, 0.2%, and I think we rounded it up. But it is 0.2%. And I indicated in the presentation that as a department, we need to be working hard in ensuring that we begin to bring disability empowerment on board in as far as our procurement is concerned. I think my last point, Chair, before I conclude is on the suggestion, Honourable Member, Matafa highlighted on legal opinion, and I think the CFO has jacked up my memory. We did get a legal opinion from senior counsel, who then cautioned us to say, let's not take it beyond what the legislation is saying. Let's stick to the legislation, and then that's what we are doing as a department, because we were taking it a step further, which was not necessarily in line with the legislation. And that we were running a risk of then being found in terms of spending, that spending is irregular because we've now applied rules beyond, even though it would have been beneficiary to the designated groups.
But we are hoping that National Treasury would be in a position to address these matters so that then we can then be in a position to accelerate transformation in as far as procurement is concerned. And in conclusion, Chair and members, we are working very closely with the DDGs. And as they have personally committed to the committee, we do have monthly sessions where we monitor, and I have committed to report to Minister and DM in terms of any progress being made on the ground. We as a department are indeed not proud that our performance turned out the way it was, and we really need to do more and ensure that we do deliver to benefit the people on the ground. Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, members.
Honorable Minister. I wanted to call a new Chairperson before Minister again.
Yep.
Oh, I was going to say, Chair, I think we've concluded our responses.
No, what we're going to do now, let's allow the chairperson of the committee to come in, and as he was put off by load shedding, after which then you will come back and wind down.
Chair, can I please have a second bite on a follow-up, please?
Is it why? Okay. Did Honorable Tangwen?
Can I come in, Chair?
Don't you want? Okay, come in then, the chairperson, after which then we'll take it back to the minister.
Okay. Thanks, Chair. Minister, you said there's no lobster on appeal, but there is an appeal on South Coast rock lobster that is under appeal, if you care to explain for us there. And I think on the other side, Minister, we were not asking for you to get into the appeals. We just want the timelines as to when these appeals will be started and when it will be resolved. Because we are well aware that you won't be able to go into this cases. And then on the I'm still not satisfied on the response on the INJ and the Sea Harbors on the troll hake allocation. What is the justification mainly for this that those two companies is having that total allowance? I didn't ask about the equity plans. I just asked about why are they are having that total allowance of catch and not under your black owned fishing companies. We are not talking only about small-scale fisheries, Minister. There are black-owned companies that is having capacity, and they're having their own infrastructure. So if you care to explain to us why is the deep-sea trawling controlled only by those two major role players in such big scale. And then lastly, have you ever met industrial fishing bodies run by SMMEs other than Fish SA? And don't you think that there is part of the endless cases, court cases that emanates from that you are only specifically focusing on Fish SA and not meeting these other fishing SMMEs? Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Tangwene, are you done? No, thanks, ma'am. Chairperson, you can come in.
Thank you so much, Honorable Chair of the session. And my apologies again. as you have correctly said, I was kicked out by load shedding. And let me again welcome the presentation, as the colleagues have said. Minister, I just thought I was not going to do justice to myself if I let the department go without raising issues, this being your first appearance before ourselves. So a lot of questions, as you could see. Let me just start where Honorable Tlangwini ended.
the question of INJ and Sea Harvest dominating our fishing, I think we need to change it. The duopoly of these two companies is just not good for democracy, and we can be held at ransom at any time by the two of them. The question of licensing, we may say that the other companies don't have capacity, but the problem is that when they go for funding, they don't have anything in their hands. If, for instance, they were to be given the rights to also fish, that's value that they go with to the bank or to any DFI, and then they say, we've got this, then allow us, then fund us. But as things are now, it's just a vicious cycle of two companies dominating our waters, and they know that black companies, women companies, companies owned by people with disabilities will never have this capacity to also get into their market. So I'm saying as we give out licenses, license has got the value that I can take to the bank and ask them to fund me. They've got the value where I can go to others to come and join me as a black company so that I'm also able to fulfill the requirements of the license. So I think we need to, Oral Minister DG, DM, we need to revisit the way we give out licenses. I'll leave it at that. Again, if my memory serves me well, I saw that in your slide you said this industry is worth about 8 billion rand, and I think only about 18 million rand goes to small to small companies. That's not even 5%. And again, we can't say we want to transform the economy and we have those type of discrepancies. We would like to hear the plans, how we're doing it. DG, one of the things that we have said from this committee is that we don't just want it to be a conduit of 2 trillion rand per year, 6 trillion rand, 6.6 trillion rand in the MTF of the monies that are being approved by Parliament without seeing what they do in inclusive economic growth, inequality, and poverty. In fact, the way it's happening, I think we're just entrenching those things. We'll find all ourselves, parliamentarians and departments, being conduits of these monies without impacting on what we're trying to do, the economic transformation of our country. So I think it's an area that we'd like to hear, Honourable Minister, how we are attending to that. Otherwise, we'll get to 50 years still having INJ and Sea Harvest being the only two companies which are dominating our waters, and the rest of the emerging fisheries will just be clapping hands and being given all types of reasons by us as government why they should not participate there. I said we welcome the issue of the department looking at strategic issues rather than the management issues, which for us are given. Those things should be there in the department. There is a phenomenon in the South Coast KZN where every season you have sardines washing at the coast. The communities there have raised an issue that this is a once-off event per year, but during that time of the year, you find that there are so many people who come there from the urban areas who come with a good infrastructure, take that fish, and then they go and make good money. The Amakhosi in those areas have also raised this concern. One, I don't know, the question is, are you aware of that? Two, are there any types of interventions that we can make that industry for those people along the coast who are mainly poor and only depend on this to try and make that a more sustainable business? For instance, intervention in creating some cold storages so that they're able to keep some of those things for both consumption and for small business activities. Uh, in forestry, aren't we seeing the same trend like the one that we do when we give farms back to people? And then before you know, those farms are unproductive because there is no support that we give. Briefly, one would like to know what we are doing, for instance, even to get them involved in some form of industrialization. We import a lot of paper. We still import a lot of paper from China. Any initiatives in that regard that you are looking at or you may be looking at? Honorable Sheikh, I thought you were going to raise this the Zama-Zama problem, because it's also more about the mines which are left and are not rehabilitated. There's a matter that Honorable Sheikh was said it was with me again emanating from these unrehabilitated mines. I just wanted to get to know what is the involvement of the department, and as you have seen in the past few weeks, the havoc that the Zama-Zamas are causing into our community. The question of effluent to which contaminates our rivers and dams. What has the department been doing here? Any involvement? Are we ensuring that the people who are responsible for that are paying the polluter pays principle? The question of what we call negative externalities. What is the department doing around that? And the implication of the understanding of chemical and waste. What are the implications of that? If you can share with us. Related to the question which was raised by Honorable Peters, the question of how bad and big is the problem of poaching in our waters. One hears of criminal activities taking place there. Up alone being one of them, but you know better. Please share with us. And lastly, the marine science and related training. What is our involvement in trying to encourage the young people to be involved in this sector? We've got a very long coast, all types of marine activity. Do we have any programs within the department which encourage young people to be involved in this sector? Through you, Honorable Zembo, if the department quickly, obviously you may not be able to give me all the answers, but those answers which are not answered, we always appreciate DG if you write back to us. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Honorable Minister.
Thank you very much, Acting Chair. And if you will allow me, I would like to just to keep my camera off because now I've got load shedding. Honorable Acting Chair, with regard to the rock lobster, sorry, I was referring to West Coast rock lobster. South Coast rock lobster is one of the fisheries that is was reappointed under FRAP, and I've received 37 appeals for South Coast rock lobster. And as I've indicated, these are sectors where there are fewer appeals. On some of the other sectors, we've got as many as 200 appeals. So we're trying to expedite the process around sectors where there are fewer appeals. On all the points, that honourable members have made about the current FRAP process. I had indicated right in the beginning that I would not want to comment because these are the matters that are before me. And I think that all we can say is this is exactly what a lot of the appeals are about. Whether there are enough new entrants, whether the TAC awarded to smaller players is adequate, objections from the organized labor that we've taken TAC away from the bigger players. These are all the issues. So let me just say that the honorable members are really reflecting the issues in the appeals, and these are the matters that are before me and that I must consider. Honorable Chair, our department is not responsible for the rehabilitation of mines. That is the responsibility of DMRE, and I'm sure when you call them before you, you can ask them to tell you all about that. And of course, DMRE is also, as you would know, in the public domain, working with the Department of Policing to look into the Zama Zama question. What we are trying to do, Chair, is to introduce new regulations that make it mandatory that mines must invest money upfront in their closure operations, because we would share the concerns of many South Africans that mine closures are not properly budgeted for, and the consequence of that is subsequent environmental disasters. On the Jagersfontein, we have a team that is working down there together with DMRE and Water and Sanitation. We are, in fact, today hosting a visit by the NCOP Portfolio Committee, the Joint Committee on Environment, Minerals and Agriculture. Obviously, part of our responsibility would be to bring in experts to assess the damage and and to advise on the consequences of the damage. We were very, very deeply involved in the UPL spill that resulted from the unrest in KZN last year. That was a spill that damaged the Umhlanga estuary. And indeed, as you correctly point out, we have a principle that the polluter must pay, and in those instances and other instances, we are part of a team that puts together the criminal and the civil proceedings in relation to those matters, so that the polluter pays both if there are criminal issues, but also must pay for the cleanup. On the poaching, the main area where poaching is a serious difficulty, Chair, is abalone and West Coast rock lobster. These are high value species. There is a legal trade, but there's also a flourishing illegal trade. And you may or may not be aware that this is something that is integrally related with organized crime in the Western Cape, and it's something that we work on together with the police services and we work on together with our fusion center. And we have had some fairly big busts, but it remains a tremendous threat to the wild stock. And the consequences of that threat to the wild stock is obviously impacts on the livelihood of small scale and commercial fishers. On marine science, I did indicate that we have a big program which supports the teaching of life sciences in schools. And we also have a program of offering bursaries for life sciences at universities and also internships for those who are qualified in this area. And we are pleased to say that in many instances, we are even starting to employ young Black scientists whom we have supported through the education. Our department is the biggest employer of scientists in the country, and I think we are quite proud of our record in this regard, and we continue to work in communities to support the teaching of life sciences that would help us in all of our branches. Let me pause there and let me request, Chair, that you can release me from this meeting. I have another meeting at 12:30, and you had indicated in your invitation you would release us by 12. Thank you.
No, thanks, Honourable Minister, and one, thanks for you and your whole team that you came to us with the full contingent of the department, which on a very now serious note, Honorable Tipua, yes, raised the question that in your department, it's a women on top kind of an arrangement, which I appreciate that even if other departments could do as such. Let's also wish you well with your plans going forward. And lastly, the secretariat of the committee would link with the office of the DG so that we can continue interacting in terms of the notes on whatever that you as the minister and the department would wish us to know more about going forward. Thank you so much. Yes, you may be released, but
thank you.
Our agenda is still continuing. If those of you who wish to remain with us,
can I take my team with me?
No.
Okay.
Comrade Minister, through Zembo. Zembo.
Yes,
Minister, do you want your team? Do you want your team with to go with your team? Where you are going, or is it just a meeting?
If I can go with my team, I'll appreciate. You know, this is a busy department. We don't want appropriations to hold up performance.
Okay. Chairperson.
Yes, Zembo.
Yes, I think. Let me take the meeting back to you so that you can wind up on the traditional proceedings.
Oh. Oh, wow. I finished the meeting at the Comrade Zembo. Just have minutes to approve. That's fine.
Bye-bye.
Bye, Minister and your team. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair and members. Thank you.
Thank you, DG and your team. DM, thank you. Honorable members, let's Chair, are you there, Zembo?
No, I'm there, but just finish up,
Kevin. okay. But thank you very much for holding the fort. Hey, this thing is sad ding dong. But thank you very much for the agility that you as members took. Thank you. Honorable members. I don't think we have got minutes. Can I get indication of any announcements, Mashile and Darren? Mashile, do you have any announcements?
Yes, I was struggling here. Good afternoon, ladies, members. We've got two announcements. One, we've received an apology from Honorable Dikhale after the meeting had commenced, one. And two, it's just a reminder that we'd have the next meeting tomorrow with the National Treasury at 9:00. The link will be sent in due course. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. I hope Honorable Tlamin is not going to throttle you about the apologies coming in now, because I'm also joining. I also received an apology from Honorable Nkwankwa, who's out of the country. He couldn't also join us. I think those will be the announcements. Honorable members, there are too many issues in this department. Fishing is a big issue, and the previous cities of Adige communities, the black people of this country. I think we need to follow up with the department and the portfolio and so on, because more should be done to empower people who have always depended on this. Thank you. This takes us to the end of the meeting.
Agree with you, Chair.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thanks, Chairperson. Thanks, Chairperson.
Chairperson, was there no minutes?
No minutes today, yeah.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. The meeting is adjourned. Thank you.